Welcome to the Rights Radio Power Hour. I'm your host, Dr. Joyce Starr. Rights Radio is brought to you by starpublications.com. That's star with two R's. And by our media site, rightsradio.com, where consumer, homeowner, health, and safe pet care rights have a permanent address. If you have a problem with a condo or HOA board, click right over to starpublications.com and purchase our homeowner's defense kit. If you want to slash your phone bills, lower your electricity bills, if you care about your shareholder and mortgage rights, cybersecurity rights, hotel security rights, to name just a few of the topics we cover, type Rights Radio into the URL bar and hit enter. And we're also pleased to announce our new Rights University Master Classes and Master Courses. Look for the Rights University on the Rights Radio homepage. Now listen up and listen in. We're talking today about car loan financing, why and when good credit can hurt you. My guest is Dora Lee Stallard, the finance manager of a Nissan dealership based in Indianapolis, and also the director and founder of FreshStartIndy.com, where she offers an inside look at the car loan process. Welcome to the Rights Radio Power Hour, Dora Lee. It's so nice to have you on the show.
Well, good afternoon, Joyce. It's great to be here.
Dora Lee, let's start with the amazing fact that 50% of consumers simply will not qualify for conventional financing. Is that true?
Well, Joyce, actually, it's probably a higher number now because of the increase of jobs loss and incomes dropping, and people have a higher debt load than they can handle. So we're finding more and more that that number is actually rising.
And what happens if that is the case? The person comes in and are they considered just part of the whole? In other words, is their credit affected by the fact that so many others will not qualify for financing? Do they take a harder look at the person who may have decent credit?
Well, what happens is the banks at this point are limited with their funds and the loans that they can give. We have lenders that provide financing for people that have good credit, and we have lenders that focus strictly for people with bad credit, okay? Now, the banks use what's called an internal scoring system. So somebody with really good credit may have issues getting a loan, not because their credit is bad, but the insiders look at their debt-to-net ratio. So somebody with an 800 Beacon score may pay their bills on time, but when a lender pulls an internal score and it shows that they have a lot of outgoing debt, that could be a risk factor, because what happens if that person gets in a situation where their income drops and now they have all this debt and can't pay it? So income and debt ratio is extremely important in factoring in a car loan.
So in other words, your credit score by itself may be fine, but that's not going to be the determining factor in whether you get that car loan or the interest rate you pay for the car loan?
That's absolutely correct. Now, people with better credit scores, when they do get a loan, they are going to get a better rate. Although I have to say that in the 12 years that I have been doing this, even in subprime lending, the lenders try to be really good about working with the consumers on interest rate. Some states have a cap on their rates and some states don't. So that plays an important factor, especially here in Indiana, where the rate is capped at 21%. We really do have an advantage, even though that is really, really a high rate. They're also high risk.
Are you telling me that there are states where it's higher than 22%?
Yes.
Oh,
yes. I've seen it go above 24%. And the reason being is that at the end of the month when the lenders are looking at their books, okay, when you finance a subprime customer, that's a risk for the lender, okay? For whatever reason, the customer got to that point with their credit, there's still a risk. So you have to take in consideration the amount of repossessions that a lender has to take in every month and to keep their books balanced. Well, they lose big time when they have to take a vehicle in on repo and take it to auction and lose money on it. Well, imagine a bank losing millions of dollars a month in repossessions. That money has to be gotten somewhere. Otherwise, they wouldn't be able to continue to lend money.
Well, they're getting it in advance by charging that outrageous interest rate.
Yeah. If the loan goes all the way through, they do. But later on, we can talk about what happens with the consumer, the good part about this for the consumer, and how they can benefit from all this.
All right, but let's try to focus for the moment, and as you said, we'll come back to it, but right now with record number of people losing their homes to foreclosure, and they still have a need for transportation, obviously, to get them to work, is there any hope for someone who's going through foreclosure and needs to get a car loan?
Yes, there is hope. As a matter of fact, when we look at a credit bureau and we see a consumer that is behind in their mortgage, until they can prove, if they plan on staying in the home, and until they can prove that they're current with their mortgage, there's no loan. If they actually go through a foreclosure, their chances of getting a loan are better because that debt will be wiped away.
All right, let's go through that very slowly because it doesn't make any sense, does it? Logically,
no,
it doesn't make sense.
Doesn't.
Okay.
What lenders are going to look at is when they pull a consumer's credit file and they see somebody has been delinquent in their mortgage, and let's say they're $6,000 behind in their mortgage and they plan on staying in the home. Well, at that point, the lender will no longer look at that customer until they can prove that that mortgage is current. Now, if somebody is actually going to have the home foreclosed on, that debt is now gone. So their chances of getting a loan are going to be better.
It's a bit outrageous. I'm very happy that the person who's foreclosed will at least be able to get a car loan so that they can get about and get a new job. But it is outrageous that the person is trying to pay all of their bills and is struggling and may also desperately need that auto to find work or to get groceries, take their kids to school, will probably not be able to do it if they have a very heavy debt.
That's correct. And, you know, the lenders look at that possibility. Here they are, you know, maybe $6,000 behind in their mortgage, and that's something that they have to get caught up with. Well, mortgage companies now offer modifications, okay? Modifications are now accepted because that is also a step in showing that you're now current, because once you get a mortgage modified, you're starting new and start fresh, and that debt is tacked onto the back of the loan. So at that point, you're now current. It is, sometimes it doesn't make sense in how the lenders look at this, but this is a strict rule that all lenders have as far as either modifying a loan, refinancing, or being current.
One of the things that you mentioned to me when we talked before the show was the fact that there are so few lenders left today, that so many have gone out of business. Is that the case?
Yes, we've had like 10 lenders that have folded, and some may be coming back, but this has happened in a period of a year, year and a half. But the good news is we still have good lenders out there that are willing to step up and help these consumers. And we do what we can to work with the lenders that we have, and we just have to look at what we do have and work the best we can with it.
What about a bankruptcy as compared to a foreclosure? Now, often a bankruptcy can ironically lead to a foreclosure even when people think their home is safe. But let us assume that they go into bankruptcy but not foreclosure. What happens?
Bankruptcies are a very easy program to work. That's one of my specialties, and I found that to be a very, very good program for these consumers. And let me explain why. People file Chapter 7. In a lot of cases, I have seen more so over the past year and a half to 2 years, is people who file a Chapter 7 and are behind on their mortgage don't really, not everybody gets to keep their home, okay? The Chapter 7 is when they completely eliminate their debt. So the lenders that we work with on this program are more keen to work with these consumers because they no longer have that debt load that put them in that situation.
I know. Again, counterintuitive. Definitely counterintuitive. But I mean, the picture that I'm getting here is that it's relatively easy to file for bankruptcy. It's not much fun to lose your home, but if your home is upside down and worth far less than you paid for it or your mortgage, then of course maybe it's better to walk away. So let's say you just walk away from everything. You've walked away from your credit cards, you've walked away from that home, and now the good news is the one thing you can do is get a car loan?
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, you can get a car loan and start getting yourself back on track with your credit.
Okay, let's talk a little bit about that. How it helps you get back on track and get stronger credit.
Well, the lenders that we use for this program are real lenders. That means that they report it to the credit bureaus every month. So as when a customer comes in and we explain how the program works, at this point, they want to start fresh. They want to start over, and they want to get back on track. And the excitement that comes about them is something really neat to see because you really feel that they're making a commitment. Because to me, and the way I explain it to them, you're not just getting a vehicle. You're getting into a credit-building program, and the vehicle is the collateral. So every month, as they're making their payments, their credit score is going up. But what it's also doing for their credit is strengthening their whole credit profile. So in other words, the lender's going to see, okay, we understand that something happened that forced the consumer into bankruptcy. But here, look, they started over. They've been paying on this for a year. Their credit score is going up. They have proven themselves that they can do this and they can handle the debt. So now, at that point, lenders start turning their heads again and saying, okay, they're getting back on track here. And in the meantime, their score keeps going up. And amazing things happen after that. After 2 years, even after foreclosure, a consumer should be able to buy a home again as long as it's been 2 years since the last house they were in sold. Because buying a vehicle, the amount of money that they're financing on the loan and building their credit, now their score is good and their profile is getting stronger.
Is there a difference between a Chapter 7 or a Chapter 13 bankruptcy?
Yes, there is. In a Chapter 7, the consumer eliminates all debt. It's wiped away. In a Chapter 13, their debts are reorganized, and they pay a trustee a certain amount of money that's agreed upon through the courts every month to pay their debts down.
Well, what is the difference? What would be the advantage of one versus the other, and where do most people go?
Well, most people try for Chapter 7 bankruptcy. In the Chapter 13, there's an income advantage, max you have to have to file a Chapter 7. And then above that, you go to a Chapter 13. And I'm not real clear on what that income is now because I have seen people come in my office that I thought should be a Chapter 13 filing that were a Chapter 7. But again, it's just different with each customer and their debts. Now, with the Chapter 7 and the Chapter 13, we use different banks for these programs, okay? And they both can be, both types of loans can be really beneficial for the customer. And there's a difference in the way we have to approach these loans and work with the customers a little bit more involved in the 13.
Well, one thing that comes to my mind is that you work for a Nissan dealership in Indianapolis.
That's correct.
And although I know through FreshStartIndy.com you've actually been able to help or guide people throughout the country, you're like the angel of car loans, but auto loans. But my question is, Nissan remains strong. Nissan wasn't in danger of going under. But the others, the U.S. auto manufacturers, of course, we all know that saga. So might it be that it would be a different story if they walked into a GM dealership? Is it because it's Nissan that they might have a better experience, or does it really not matter?
No, that does not matter, because then what we don't focus on so much the new cars and the franchise. We're just lucky to be working with the dealerships that the particular one that I work with. I just have a good staff of people. No, it's the special finance department that makes the difference, and taking care of the customer, caring about what these customers are going through, and that's the most important thing. You have to put yourself in these people's shoes and understand the fear they have and the anxiety over everything that they've been through and that they're going through. And it makes a difference when you really sincerely care about these people and sit them in front of you. It doesn't matter. You could be working out of a cardboard box. Just show these people that you care and want to really, truly do something to help make a difference in their lives.
Well, Dora Lee, I know that you care, and because I heard about you for a long time, but I think that consumers and people who are listening to this program are going to be shocked to hear that people who offer car loans actually care. It's just the furthest thing from their mind. They would assume it's all business and, of course, all interest, all about interest from many points of view. But perhaps you can share some stories or vignettes or encounters that you've had that would show the human side of it all.
Well, I've had some really touching experiences in my years in the business. And what consumers need to understand is most of these dealerships, first of all, they do care. And some care more than others. I agree with that point. There's a limit to what dealerships can sell cars for. Dealerships are no longer able to make a lot of money on these loans, okay? It's the banks that make the money. But when you work in secondary finance, such as I do, you have to care about these people because every day is a different story and it gets stressful. But over the years, I can give you one particular story that has really inspired me. And we had a lady that got into the program, and after a year, she comes walking into the dealership, just tears pouring down her face, happy as can be, claimed that because of the program, she was able to get a mortgage. And what happened was, evidently, this just built her self-esteem up so good. She felt so good about herself because, really, the consumer, when they leave the dealership, they are in complete control of this. This is their credit. And this is their life. They're building this, and they're doing this themselves, and they make this commitment to do this. But she did really well on the program, got a mortgage, ended up getting a new job, met a new man. I mean, everything in her life changed. But she said it was because we gave her the loan, and I told her, no, it was because you did what you were supposed to do. So I think consumers need to understand that, you know, we get them in there, and we help them get the loan set up. But when they walk out of there, it's their responsibility. They need to take a look at their spending habits, their budget, and just be responsible again. And they're in complete control of their credit from that day on.
But, of course, they are paying a higher rate, are they not? Are you able to get some of these people who've gone through foreclosure or bankruptcy a lower rate?
No, but there's good news there, too.
Okay.
Initially get them a lower rate. But if the customers get on this program and stay on it a year, now this is not 100% guaranteed with everybody. It depends on the consumer and their situation and how well they pay their loan. There are options to refinance that loan and get a lower interest rate after 9 months to a year.
Now, I have an auto loan, and I called up the company, and I said, I'd like to refinance this, and they said, we don't do it. we don't do it. You have to go to someone else. I said, I want to go to someone else. I have it with you. It's your car. I want to refinance it with you. And they said, no, we can't do that. It's our policy. That seems very cold to me. And then that puts the consumer through hoops. You have to jump through hoops, go someplace else, and maybe, what, like a mortgage, maybe they can even sell it and sell it to somebody else, and then you're kind of lost. Is that the case or no?
Well, not every lender will refinance their loans, but there are lenders out there who will refinance the loans that you have. Absolutely. I've had people in open bankruptcies who decided to keep their vehicle, and I was able to refinance their loan for them and get them in a lower payment through the Open 13. So it does. You can do that, all right? It all is relationship with the banks, but it can be done. I have directed many customers to go online and experiment with that a little bit with different lenders, and they've been able to come through with that fine and actually get the rate a lot lower. So,
but are they able to resell it as they might if they held your mortgage, for example? In other words, my concern is that when you're dealing firsthand, your first car loan is with X. You trust X. You have a direct relationship with X. Now you've refinanced with Y, and you don't have that relationship. It's not even their car. Can Y then sell it to Z, and somehow you'll end up with A, and people can play games with you when they sell those car loans?
It's not like the mortgage industry. I have seen loans sold. I've seen first loans sold. Okay, the first car loan. Let's say somebody goes in and gets a fresh car loan. I've seen that loan sold, and I didn't know the lender was even doing that. I've seen that happen, but I don't see it happen two or three times with the same vehicle.
All right. But when it does happen, is that very traumatic for the person, or it's not
at
really
all.
Very traumatic? All right.
No, not at all. But my customers haven't made any comments about that. They don't care as long as they get their monthly statement on time, and if they have any issues, that there's a customer service department that they can contact. I really don't have any bad feedback from any of that happening.
But a car loan is usually the biggest debt that people have aside from their home. So now they're probably paying a relatively high interest. They have the car loan. How does it affect their overall credit rating? Because it is another obligation.
Well, again, when you initially get a loan, first of all, the lenders watch your debt ratio. So the only thing that's going to really pull your score down is if you've got that car loan and your debt ratio is too high. Well, that's not going to happen nowadays. One of the things the banks have cut back on is lending people money who have a high debt ratio. So initially, you won't see your score go up right away. But with the car loan, you're going to start seeing your score go up because of the amount of money that you're borrowing. It's very significant. It's good for your credit. Now, if you have a car loan and then all of a sudden your credit card balances start increasing up over 30, 50% of what your total credit limit is, then you're going to see your score starting to drop. So there's other factors involved with the car loan that's going to affect your credit score.
Isn't it too bad we can't just walk in and pay cash?
Well, some people do that too, but not very often.
Really, think about it. Think about this. We're in such a maze here of loans and credit, and we begin to feel that the credit score is this almighty in the sky saying, you know, you're a good person. No, you're a bad person. You go left. You go right. I'm sure that you see a lot of frustration.
I do. And a lot of the frustration that I have seen over the years is people that sit down and tell me, I don't know how to manage my money. That's where the frustration comes in. And when someone wants to start fresh and really has a good attitude about starting fresh, it's like, okay, I want to learn how to take control of my life again. Because, unfortunately, our credit does control our life. It's unfortunate, but that's just the American way. And if we ever want to have any credit in the future, we have to keep an eye on our credit now, and we have to try to fix things that have gone bad in the past. And you can redeem yourself at any time you choose to make that commitment to do that. So as a consumer, we have to watch. One of the biggest problems people have is credit cards. And that is one of the quickest ways to bring your score down and affect you being able to get a car loan or even a mortgage.
Why don't you walk us through exactly what you need to do step by step from the time you walk into that auto dealership?
Well, the first thing that you need to do, if you are a customer that needs to get a vehicle, you want to call around and talk to different dealerships and ask them what kind of programs they have for secondary or special finance. Make sure they have a special finance department that is there to assist you from beginning to end through the whole process and answer all your questions. The next thing you want to do is go in and sit down with a salesperson or the finance manager and do a credit application. When you go into a dealership, it's always best to have a current pay stub, a current phone bill, a current utility bill, and references. Now, the references normally that we ask for are 7 references, and they would be the names, addresses, and phone numbers of people that know you that do not live in your house. This is required by every lender to get a loan through secondary finance. So at that point, the credit app would be done. You get all your employment history and your residence history, and the credit would be run. At that point, the finance manager looks at the credit and looks at the fact that if you have a car loan now or if you don't. At that point, they decide the best lenders to look at sending it through. Okay, so basically, if you have all those stipulations when you walk in, the chances are of you being able to drive off in a car that same day, as long as they find the lender right away to pick the loan up, your chances are very good. But it's important to have those stipulations. They are all required to get a loan. That you take a list of questions in there with you. Make sure you get all your questions answered, whether it be the kind of car you're looking for, what you qualify for, how long it's going to take for you to get your credit score back up, how much money you need down. That's another thing. Lenders do require a certain amount of cash. So another important thing to ask your finance person or your salesperson is about the money down. All banks require money down. The reason being is they want that commitment from the customer that they're going to take that next step in loan and get themselves back on track.
That's a very good summation. What about some pitfalls along the way?
Pitfalls along the way. Well, customer has instability of employment. You have a customer, let's say, that has been on the job for 2 months. Previous job is 1 month. Job before that was 4 months. That won't fly with the lender. They want stability. So if you have any instability in your employment, that's going to be a problem with getting a good lender in place for a customer. Stability is extremely important. Somebody who has really, really tough credit but has been on their job for 12 years and makes a decent income, they're going to be able to get a car. Somebody who has been skipping jobs is going to have a harder time getting a loan.
So let us assume that someone has gone through this process and everything is excellent. Is there a waiting period? Is there something more that we need to tell them in this process? Or do they call Dora Lee and say, you know, was it all okay? Did I do it right? Or what are we
well,
doing?
Yeah. There can be a waiting period. It all depends on the customer. That's why it's so important that a customer bring in what is necessary to get the loan to go through faster. A lot of lenders like to verify employment history, and if a person is renting a home, they want to verify that with the landlord and that they're current and they've been a good tenant. If somebody has been consistently late with their landlord, they're going to have trouble getting a loan. Again, they look for stability. Sometimes it could take a day or two to get an answer. Sometimes we get an answer within a half an hour. So it just all depends on the customer and their credit, bottom line, because the better, even though it's subprime, we have our range of subprime. We have our best subprime customers, which qualify for our better lenders. You know, you might have somebody who does, their credit's not real great, but it's not real tough. We're not, you know, we're not looking at Beacon scores in the 400s. They may get a loan within 20 minutes or so. And you have customers who, you know, had double bankruptcies, had two or three repossessions in the past. And then that may take a little bit longer. There's more work to do on that, on the lender's part. And that's another thing I wanted to talk to you real quick. If you have a history of 4 bankruptcies, for example, and multiple repossessions, the chances of you getting a loan are going to be tough. It's going to take a lot more work. We have to find out why we had all these repossessions. We have to do a little bit more digging up front. So the finance person should be asking questions regarding this and taking notes on this, so that when we talk to a lender, we can say, this is what happened. They had an illness in the family, or they had a death in the family that caused this. We have to be able to answer these questions.
What about the security of your information? For example, a lot of it is online, and you're giving very vital information. I know you have a really highly secure website at freshstartindy.com. But I've seen many sites where I wouldn't give them the time of day, and they're asking for people's social security number and their birthday. I'm going, oh, my Lord, and people are just putting it in online. I'm really worried about that.
It's so, so important to have a secure site. You have to make sure that you're secure, and you have to check that constantly, because you're right. I mean, that's people's personal information. The way we handle it, at our dealership, we also have a website that people can go online. It's their choice. We call them first. We give them a choice, okay, because we want them to know who we are and that their information is here in front of us, and their credit's not going to get run until that phone call is made, okay? But what we prefer is people come in, okay? But the website is there to assist people mainly who don't want to talk to somebody right off the bat. They want to hear first, yeah, I'm going to be able to get a car loan. We're going to be able to help you. But that's why it's important, when if you're doing a website, you have to have a disclaimer on there. Let people know that information is coming strictly to the person it's intended for. Nobody else sees it, and it's secured. Now, anybody who works with any kind of website better make sure that nobody can get in through the back door. That's extremely important.
Well, that's what bothers me. I mean, I know the developer of your website, and I know your attitude, and I know your record, and it's been impeccable. But I've seen other sites that just in order, what they do is that they talk about auto loans, but it's not even their, or even homeowner loans, but it's not their primary topic. But they'll say, while you're here, you can qualify for a homeowner insurance loan or an auto loan. And it's not their primary business, but people are putting in very, very important data. And
well,
to my mind, that's a red flag.
I caution people against that, okay? You need to stick with a site. If it's strictly for auto loans, you go there. If it's strictly for mortgages, you go there. You need to make sure the company is reputable, and you also need to read it. Consumers don't take the time to read disclaimers and know what they're doing. You don't just get online and give your information. That is not good sense at all. You have to know who you're giving your information to. Read the website before you give the information. Know who you're working with. Know who you're dealing with. Make a phone call. Talk to the person. That's really important. Know who you're dealing with.
Well, now you say something really that rings a bell here, because, again, in another case where I placed a call, I just was intrigued by the ad I saw on TV, and I called them up, and I said, I'd like to know what your rates are. I wanted general rates. I wanted to know a range of rates. If I gave them a few factors, but immediately an operator who is obviously at a call center, wanted every piece of personal data in order to run the numbers. Well, I just don't think that's right. I really don't.
Don't ever give personal information over the phone. Ever. That's just not, and consumers should not do that, okay? And if a customer calls up and says, I insist on it, you know, I mean, I think that there needs to be, you know, people listening in on this and listening to this, because I don't think that anybody should give their information like that over the phone. You don't know who you're talking to, okay? You don't know what they're doing with your credit and your personal information. I think that's
what
the idea.
Well, let's say it's a big company. Let's say it's a big company like Geico. You know,
yeah.
And you call them up and you say, well, I saw your commercial and I know you're going to save me $400 in a year. So what are the rates? And they'll say, well, we need your date of birth and your Social Security number. But the person you're talking to is not an intelligent representative of a dealership who's sitting in an office and that's what they do all day. That is simply an operator. That operator could be anywhere. It could even be in India for all we know. That's what bothers me.
Well, see, most, like Geico has a website you can go on. That's secure, okay? I just don't recommend you do it over the phone. There's other ways
right.
to handle
okay.
that without doing it over the phone. I think it's a bad idea to give your information like that over the phone.
So that they shouldn't really even be, in other words, a company like Geico should not be encouraging you to call up. They should be encouraging you to use the website because the website is more secure than the telephone.
I agree with that, yes.
Okay.
Yes.
I think even more secure would be to come in and sit down with a person like yourself. Now, that would give me a high level of comfort.
That's the best way to do it. It really is. And what we run into is, and I hate to say this, but this is what I've run into over the past years. People are by nature lazy. They don't want to make that drive or, you know, and or afraid to face someone. No, sit down. You want to meet the person that's working with your personal credit information. I would want to know. You want to get in front of them and get to know who is taking care of you. And what steps they're going to be taking. That's why I suggest go in and sit down with them. Have a list of questions. And ask them how they're going to be handling your credit information. No, don't be afraid. It's worth to me to get up out of the chair, get in the car, and drive to the dealership with everything you need and your list of questions and meet the people that are handling your credit.
And I think you should ask how long that person has been doing the job. Maybe that person has been on the job for 5 or 6 months. Maybe they're not a long-term employee. But when they're dealing with a person like you, there's longevity there. There's reliability. That's what we're looking for, whether it's in Indianapolis or New York or Miami. Doesn't matter where it is, but I think that's what you're looking for.
Right. You want somebody who understands the ups and downs of the business, who's been through the changes, who knows the lenders, has a good relationship. That's all important. Professionalism and integrity.
I want to ask you a question here, and that is, have you seen cases where people were handing over that information to obtain an auto loan where there was, you know, maybe a slew of cases of identity theft, or does that really not happen in the auto loan arena?
I have not had that happen in any of the dealerships I've been in.
Okay.
And I'm always amazed when I hear about identity theft. It's, where are they getting this information from? Dealerships, we keep our files locked and double locked. There's no way anybody can have access to them, not even the salespeople. We do not print out credit bureaus. Okay, everything stays in file. We use what's called dealer track, which is where we run our credit and send it and submit it to the lenders. Nobody has access to this. This is all very secure. And the only thing I can think of is people getting online and giving their information to companies they don't know who they're dealing with. And
what you said is very important. Can you? You said it's locked and double locked. Locked where? Locked how? How is that locked up?
Okay, we have file cabinets that are locked And then our offices are locked. So nobody has the keys but the person whose office it belongs to and the general manager. So the salespeople can't get in there. Nobody can get in there and pull out files. And every office has lock and key and file cabinets that lock. So, and even our business office that handles the title work, whatnot, that's the same thing in there. Everything's locked and safe.
But is that vital data on paper or is it digitalized or?
Well, they're files. We have to have paper files. We have contracts and copies of credit applications. We have to have papers, and by law, we have to have them on file. Okay. So we have to keep that stuff in files, and it's always been very, very secure. Everything stays locked up. The salespeople can't even get to it. So, and every dealership that I've ever been in has been very, very cautious about that. We respect these people's identity and their credit information. The only thing that could possibly happen if a consumer walks in the dealership in hand with the fake social security number they're going to use and fake driver's license. You know, that's happened before in dealerships where they didn't get it from us, but they walked in the dealership with it. And they sign an application stating that that is their information that they have given the dealership. So that would be one way it could happen, but not on the fault of the dealer so much as it is the customer who is trying to steal somebody's identity to buy a car.
Now, you're located in Indianapolis, and as I mentioned, I know you've helped people in other areas of the country more because you're a very nice person than because you were going to benefit. In fact, you weren't going to benefit at all from it. But are you available to consult with customers from other parts of the country now?
I'm happy to, always. It tickles me to death when somebody can get on and get online and leave me a little email. And what I do is I'll track a dealership in their town for them that can help them. And that's just a real joy. It's just really nice when I get the feedback, too, saying, thank you, I got my vehicle. And it just it makes me happy when I can just do a little bit of something to help make somebody's life a little bit better for them.
Well, how should they contact you? What's the best way?
The best way to contact me is through freshstartindy.com. They can go to the comment section, and I'd be glad to get back with them.
And let's spell that for them. Could you just spell out the website name?
Yes, it's freshstartindy.com.
Where did you come up with the nice name, Fresh Start Indy?
It just came to me. Fresh Start Indy. I like it.
You like giving people a fresh start. That's really what you're all about, isn't it?
That's what this is about. It's not about selling a car. It's not about making money. It's about helping people find a fresh start in their life where they can take control of their life and their finances again and see everything turn around for them. That's what it's about.
What is your view of the auto industry today? Do you think that the big players are going to go down, that we're going to see the landscape change radically, or do you think that they're going to come back fighting?
I think, first of all, no, I don't think they're going to go down. There may be some changes made. We have some good products out there, good domestic products that the American consumer likes to buy and likes to drive. I just think that they're going to focus on the strong points they need to focus on and maybe do some restructuring. As far as totally crashing, no way. No, I don't think that's going to happen. I just think there'll be a lot of restructuring going on.
Do you feel that and I know we're going off tangent here, but do you feel that the bailout was justified? Do your colleagues think it was justified? What's the buzz in your industry?
The buzz is they don't want to see GM fail. They don't want to see any of the domestic manufacturers fail, okay, because sometimes it causes a domino effect with the fear. Well, what's going to happen next? Because when one part of the industry hurts like that, and then this is major, it does affect people's attitude about buying. okay? Because the media has scared people a lot. But what people need to understand is all hope is not lost. We still have good products out there for consumers to choose from, domestic as well as imports. There's still lenders out there that are willing to help, and there's still people out there who care. But the media scares people into a corner where they're afraid to take the cover off their face and face what's going on and face the world and move forward. And I know.
Well, actually, they're afraid to buy. They're afraid to buy a GM car because they're afraid GM won't even be there to service it. Instead, it's going to be serviced by the White House.
Well, I don't know what's going to happen with that part of it, but I know that GM is a really good company. GM builds a good product. I don't think they're going to totally go down. And I really feel and have faith that whatever happens, whether it be GM, the government, who else, the people, consumers are going to have help and support for whatever the cars they buy from GM. I know that whatever happens, they're not going to be abandoned.
I know. When we talk about it now, and in a way it's a bit of fresh air to be talking about it like this, if you step back, you think, come on, GM is not going out of business. And then on the other side, you say, well, how could they not have seen what was coming? Why were they putting such money into SUVs and gigantic cars and gas guzzlers? Why weren't they smarter? And so it's kind of a yin-yang of frustration, both with the company and yet, as you said, with the media for making it all seem so dire.
Right. Well, GM has always been, I should say Chevy specifically. Everybody loves Chevy trucks, okay, and SUVs. And there was a big demand for it. And it really started falling drastically when the gas prices went up so high. And when the economy started taking a major hit, well, guess what? Those SUVs and trucks aren't affordable like they used to be. So that's a big part of it. But, you know, the way I feel about it is GM and Chevy, they've been around for a long time. You know, a lot of people still respect the product and still want to buy the product. And I have every bit of faith that even with restructuring, that they're going to be around. And they're not going to totally fold. And I just think that people, the consumers especially, need to look at their buying habits. And, well, do you really need to spend $25,000, $30,000 on an SUV? Okay? Look at what you need, not what you want and what desire, what your heart desires. We all have to be more practical in the way we approach things and the way we buy things. We all have to watch our budget.
We wish that they had watched their budget so that we didn't have to bail them out. In a way, that's a double whammy for the consumer because now it's harder to get an auto loan. It's harder to get the car of your dreams. And you've given that, you know, your tax money, such as you might be paying taxes, to those big guys who were frivolously spending your money. So from that point of view, it's pretty frustrating.
It is
frustrating. Do you get that feeling?
And I agree, and it's a shame that we even are going through this, but the fact is we are. We can't go back and change it now, but all we can do is keep our heads up and try to have a positive attitude about the direction our own life is going and try to make things better for our families.
Let's talk just for a moment about children. Do you see people coming in, dragging their children and begging for a loan because look at my kids and I need to take them here and there? Is there a lot of that emotion going on?
No, not so much that. More fear over if I don't have a car, I won't be able to keep my job. That's the biggest, and that's understandable. And, you know, you sit there and say, if I could do this right now, you'd be driving off the lot right now. I do want to help you. But still, you know, we still have to go through the same process.
Do you see people losing their jobs because they've lost their car or can't get a car? Have you had many
instances? I have not seen that. People threatened to lose their jobs without a car. You know, on many, many occasions, we've been able to remedy that for them. So, you know, I understand. And Yes, it has happened where somebody says, my job is threatened because I can't get to work. Well, then the dealership all of a sudden becomes the hero because we're able to get them in a vehicle and now they can go to work tomorrow.
Well, I guess if you don't have a car and you work far from, you live far from your office, it is very hard. Public transportation is horrible in most cities.
Oh, it's true. But, you know, most of what it does, without a vehicle, people feel like they lose their freedom. Okay, and, you know, you feel kind of trapped at home, trapped, can't get anywhere, can't do anything, and that doesn't do anything for your ego, your self-esteem. That can bring a person down as well. When you have a vehicle, you have more of a sense of freedom to be able to get in your car and go where you need to go, accomplish what you need to accomplish, and it's also even better when you know that you're making your payments every month and you're getting your credit established and you're doing it yourself.
You know, you bring a whole new light to auto loans. I mean, actually, you bring light to auto loans, but you also put it in a new light. Are you there?
Yes, I'm here. I'm thinking.
Oh, okay. I thought I lost you for a second. But I was going to say that I have a different feeling about it after talking with you through this hour, because I don't think I've written, I mean, people don't really talk much about the role of the auto in your feeling of liberation, freedom, self-confidence, control over life. We don't talk about the automobile or vehicle for that at all. It's hardly part of the sociological terrain. And yet, for you, it's the keystone of the sociological terrain.
Absolutely. I've seen it. I've seen what it does for people. And to me, there's no greater joy. I cannot express this enough. When I have somebody come in and get them in a loan, that's the first difference that I can make in their life. And it's not all me. You know, I start the process, but they appreciate it. And I see a relief come over them. And then over a year of making their payments, to see a difference in their credit, there's nothing that gives me more joy than to see somebody succeed from this program.
Thoroughly, we began by saying that more, and you pointed out more than 50% of consumers do not qualify for auto loans. And now through this program, you've shown our listeners why it's so important that people be helped in every way possible to qualify for auto loans, that it's really it really goes to the core of their psychological well-being. So you put something on the table here that I think is very important. Maybe a few lawmakers should hear what you have to say, because based on what you're saying, they should be doing much more to make it easier for people to qualify for those auto loans.
I agree with you there. I wish it was easier, and it's not all the lawmakers. You know, again, we don't want to have to keep bailing out lenders that, you know, take risk in helping people and thousands and thousands of people that default on their loans. That's what got a lot of these banks into trouble to begin with. I would love to see the banks ease up a little bit and start lending more money. We all would. It's tough out there, and it's tough for the consumer, and it's tough for the dealerships, and we're all riding this wave together. But like I said earlier, I'm grateful to have what I do have, the lenders that I do work with. I respect them. I love working with them. They're professional. They're wonderful to work with. They care about the customers. I couldn't ask for more than that.
Well, we couldn't ask for more than having you on this show to talk about auto loans, and it's been our pleasure to have Doralee Stallard with us today. And again, thank you, Doralee, so much.
It's been a great pleasure and honor to speak with you all, and I hope that I was able to offer some insight and some help to some people out there.
I know you did. And
this is
Dr. Joyce Starr with the Rights Radio Power Hour. And again, I want to remind you about our new Rights University. You'll find it at rightsradio.com. We have some wonderful master courses in how to master your rights. and we'll be speaking with you again in 2 weeks on Wednesday at 5 o'clock Eastern Time and 2 o'clock Pacific Time. Dr. Joyce Starr signing off. Bye-bye.